Trust is something we desire from others, and it's something we can count on from God, as we hear in this observation from Mike McIntosh.
And if God is going to be our friend, then we have to be able to trust God. And most of the Old Testament, and especially the Psalms, are about us trusting God. And the big thing about the trust of God, all the way from the trials of Abram offering Isaac, to Joseph being in the pit, to Ezekiel laying on his side for 390 days, do you name the things that God has asked people to do, it really comes down to all the opportunities that we have to trust Him till the moment we're on that deathbed. That's what it's really headed towards. Are you going to trust Him within 30 minutes of your death, or 5 minutes, or the next 20 seconds, and your family are sitting around holding hands and singing or praying with you, and you know you're leaving? Are you going to trust Him to release your spirit, as Jesus said, "Into your hands I commend my spirit"?
And I'll stand up and shout, and I'll praise You, Lord Jesus. And I'll stand up and sing, and I'll thank You, Lord Jesus.
Sharpens iron. That's the title of our teaching today from Mike's series in Proverbs here on Chapter and Verse. Psalm 41 verse 9 says, "Even my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me." People will disappoint us. It's in their nature. It's in our nature for us to disappoint our family, our friends, our Father in heaven. Before we condemn those who fail us, we should look through the eyes of Jesus at how often we fail Him. Family, friendship, and their fellowship are blessings from God, but we can't base our hopes on these transient gifts. Our true confidence lies only in the eternal, in the love of God, and the promise of Jesus. Let's open our Bibles to the book of Proverbs 27 as we listen to Mike McIntosh for today's study.
Verse 8. Like a bird that wanders from his nest is a man who wanders from his place. So you've got him talking about friends. You've got him talking about anger and wrath. Then he goes back about friends. Then he tells you to be satisfied in relationships and eating and just life in general. Then he tells us that a bird that forgets where his nest is like a man that wanders away from his wife or from his children or his business or whatever, he's not doing too well. So to have a friend come up to a wanderer and say, "You know, you have left the things of God. Do you remember when you used to go to the house of the Lord with those that called upon His name, and you used to rejoice, and you were so positive? Now you're negative, you're critical, you're bitter, and your life's falling apart." So the friend comes along and wounds you a little bit, but you know that that person did it because they loved you. You know, sometimes my wife says things to me that pokes and digs me a little deeply, and I don't want to hear them, but I know she's right, and I know she's telling me because she loves me. She truly has the gift that the Bible talks of, wisdom, and I'm trying to figure out some complexity, and she just says this one little zinger from "See Dick throw the ball, and Spot bit Puff, and Jane ran after whatever those old..." You guys are so young, you don't even know what I'm talking about. Come on, some of you know what I'm talking about. Those were our first grade primers, okay, Dick and Jane books. And she will say something that's so full of wisdom, and I'll realize, oh my goodness. And I sometimes tell her, "You know, God just spoke through you." I try to tell her all the time. But a friend does it not to hurt you, but it could wound you. So sometimes people that work for you keep things from you in the back warehouse or whatever, you know, not wanting to burden you, not wanting to bother you. But how can you be a leader? How can you operate your family if you don't have all the information for the full picture? I always need the full picture. And then Sandy will say to me sometimes, "Well, they didn't tell you this or that because they're just trying to protect you. They don't want to burden you. They're trying to please you." And I say, "Yeah, but I can't be a leader if they're not being honest. I need to know the truth." So when a friend comes, it's faithful. It could be wounding, but it's much better than an enemy hugging you and stabbing you and hurting you. The night I went in for, before I went in for surgery, I got up at 4 in the morning, but I had a horrible, horrible nightmare. I don't have nightmares. And it was in the gymnasium, and it was a Sunday service. And somebody that I knew, but I didn't recognize them, came up. They were disguised in a real long trench coat, and they had a hat over their face, and it was down. I couldn't see who it was. So I was standing there shaking hands, and this person comes over, and I looked over at a couple guys in security and a couple pastors to see if they could help with the line. And this person, as I looked down, put their hand on my shoulder, and I looked, and up their sleeve was a pair of scissors with the blades open. And they pulled me next to them, and they began stabbing me. Well, it was killing me, and I started crying out. Nobody could hear what I was saying, and when I would fall forward, this man would pull me close, and it looked like he was hugging me. Like, you know, he was loving on me or talking to me, and then he'd keep stabbing me. Well, I woke up to that, and it was as real as if it really happened. I mean, it freaked me. And in 2.5 hours, I'm going to go in for surgery. I've never had surgery in my life. I've never been out, you know. And I wasn't looking forward to it. And then a week later, after the surgery failed and I had to go back for an emergency surgery, I look now and I've got 2 huge scars right where that guy was stabbing me. And there are so many parallels to that dream that happened during that time. I would rather have a friend wound me than to have an enemy be deceitful and disguise himself and draw me near and then ram me. Because at least you can defend yourself, you know. So this thing about friends and I think it all ties together with the anger and the wrath, and the words can blow you over like a river, or they can be weighty like sand or a rock. Another thing is, actually, when we try to be pleasing or to please people as opposed to truthful, it can cause the sin of respect of persons to enter into our life, and then we've sinned, and we've let somebody get away with something. I got stopped by a highway patrolman once, and I said, how fast were you going? And it was in the desert, and I said, I was doing 60. And he said, well, yeah, you were doing 60 when you saw me and you slowed down. And I said, yeah. And he said, my radar had you going a little faster there. And I said, yeah, I was. And then he took my license and he said, I'll tell you what, will you slow it down? I said, yeah, I'll slow it down. He says, okay. I said, but I don't want any favoritism or anything. And then he said, so Mike. So it meant he knew who I was. I didn't know that. Do you want me to write you a ticket? And I said, no, absolutely not. You would write me one though, right? And says, you bet I would. And so I said, okay, thanks, I'm out of here. So there is a fine line there. I think French President Charles de Gaulle, those of you, the majority of you are too young to remember him, and he was a president of France, and he was pretty strong with the French military during World War II. I think French President Charles de Gaulle made it clear that we can't go it alone. We need friends, and we need to love each other and help each other. And he said this, very famous quote, how can you be expected to govern a country that has 246 kinds of cheese? Okay, moving on. You guys are all too young. All right. You know, you can't read the 27th chapter without catching verses 6, 10, and 17 being united and together, all being a theme that was dear to the heart of Solomon. So we get here to the 9th verse, ointment and perfume delight a person's heart, and the sweetness of a man's friend gives delight by hearty counsel. So good counsel. So then he says in the 10th verse, still with this theme of friends, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend. Friendships are generational. So your father's friend. So that means if your dad had friends, then he dies and some of these friends are still around. You go to them. You love them. You're still friends with them. You're part of the family like they are. You stay a friend even to those people. So he's telling us some things that he learned from David, actually. Nor go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor nearby than a brother that is far away. So now he's teaching us another principle here about the friends. He's teaching us this concept that, you know, if you've got a person that lives close to you that is good, hearty counsel, like he said in the last verse, that actually will be helpful to you and loving to you, then it's much better to go to one that is near than to take all your problems and be the brother-in-law or the sister-in-law or the mother-in-law moving in, you know, 200, 400 miles from here and bringing the problems with you. So it's just some family friend wisdom there from Solomon, I think. This verse, of course, along with the sixth verse, ties with verse 17 that says, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Could you all read that out loud together? Iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. I have a friend that went to heaven a few months ago, and he was a very close friend of Chuck Smith. He's one of Chuck's first elders and board members, and he mentored me in business and the Word. And I remember when they told me he was fading fast, I drove out one late Sunday night to Marietta and showed up in the intensive care and held his hand, and he couldn't talk. He had had a stroke and then a heart attack, and he didn't have much longer to go, and he squeezed my hand, and a little smile came up. And I could just tell my presence there, because I was like a son to him. And when Sandy and I first entered the ministry, we got $75 a week, and he would slip us an extra 20 now and then, and you know, just loved us. And he was a very, very wealthy man, and very successful business. And he taught me very early this verse about iron sharpens iron. He said, you know, Mike, you can't have friction unless you have two things rubbing together. Now, we all know that. But when you think of that, the only reason I have friction in my life or you is that we're rubbing each other. And usually we rub each other the wrong way to get the sparks flying. But if it goes back to verse 6 and verse 10 and to the theme that's being woven through here, if it's true friendship and not deceitful friendship, disguised friendship that's going to knife you, but it's real friendship that's open and pure before the throne of God, well then you're going to have iron sharpening iron as friends, or a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. So if you come up and wound your sister or brother by being very honest and saying, look, this is sinful and I want to tell you this, and they get a frown on their face, but then they hug you and cry, your countenance and their countenance, otherwise you can walk into the room and a friend can smile and light up because you're there, or a friend can get sad because you're sad. You become all things to all men that you might win the more to the Lord. You weep with those that weep. You laugh with those that laugh. Your countenance affects other people's countenance. Does that make sense to you? So you have a lot of power just in loving people. And that was the whole theme of Jesus. Love God, all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. Love neighbor like you love yourself. So this iron sharpening iron, I've always liked that one. My son, be wise and make my heart glad, that I may answer him who reproaches me. That's a word for any mom or dad, huh? You want your sons and daughters to be wise. You want your children to make your heart glad. You know, my mom was here for she came to the Lord at 60 years old, and she was retired, and she didn't have any money, and so Sandy and I moved her to San Diego and helped her with a little apartment and just didn't want her being off by herself up in Oregon where I was raised. And she became such a strong prayer warrior, and she was the head of our prayer ministry, and she just prayed and prayed like my grandmother did. But my mom waited 60 years, and my grandmother went from her early 20s till she was 86 years old as a true intercessor prayer warrior. And I remember, because we were very poor, I was a troubled kid. I was drinking heavily at 15, 16 years old. And my mom just knew I couldn't be controlled, that there was nobody that could control me. But when Jesus came into my life, this verse became very real to her. She couldn't get over, I'm so proud of you, I'm so proud of you, I'm so proud of you. And for a parent, I understand that now. Because I brought her a lot of heartache. I remember one night getting in big trouble and ended up in the hospital and coming home on crutches, and I was drunk as a skunk. I was only 16 or 17 years old, out carousing with a bunch of guys, and we lived in a second story of an apartment building, and 2 or 3 in the morning, I'm trying to work my way up the stairs, and she comes out on the landing, and she's just really upset. She's been up all night. She's already lost my brother to an automobile accident. She doesn't want to lose another kid. I mean, I'm not thinking of what Amon's going through. And from the bottom or the third step of the stairwell, she can smell the alcohol. And her husband, my dad, was a flaming alcoholic and abuser. And she said, "Have you been drinking?" And I looked now, and I broke her heart. And I said, "Of course I've been drinking. I'm flaming drunk." You know, and I just thought, what a stupid thing. But now I realize, as Solomon says, when a parent can say, "Go out and do good," and the kid does good, boy, the heart. So as a mom or dad, if you are a parent or you're going to be a parent, there are going to be heartaches with your children. But if you train up a child in the way that he should go, though he departs from it, when he is older, he shall return to it, the Lord. That's the great hope we have. We don't know when, but we know that if the word is in the heart, that their heart will eventually perk up again and come back to the things of the Lord. So be wise, make my heart glad, that I may answer him who reproaches me. A prudent man foresees evil and he hides himself. And the simple keep on going their own way. And that's a good one in these times. Be very prudent, be very wise, very prayerful, and hide yourself from the storm. Get out of the battle zone and just wait on the Lord. Take the garment of him who is surety for a stranger and hold in a pledge when he is surety for a seductress. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice rising early in the morning, it will be counted a curse to him. Now that's a personal one. I'm not a morning person. I'm a night person. I don't go to bed till midnight. And it's always, since I was a kid, hard to wake up. You know, I just have slow metabolism. And when Bill Goodrich, the pastor of Horizon in Indianapolis, was here for 8 or 10 years, Bill, he just has one of those personalities that he just is always happy. He's just always bursting with joy and excitement. And you wake up, and I'd travel with him around the world, and I'd be staggering out of my hotel room to try to go to the taxi or something. "Hey, Mike, how are you doing?" And one day I just opened my Bible and said, "Read it." "Please, Bill, give me some time to be human, and then let's start going at it." Verse 15, this is the fifth time now I think we've seen something close to this. A continual dripping on a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Boy, oh boy. And it's only women that laugh at this. I don't get it. Whoever restrains her, oh, this is a good one. Whoever restrains her, the contentious woman, restrains the wind. Yeah, try to do that. And grasp oil with his right hand. Now, I was going to bring some Wesson oil tonight, and I thought you might get upset. But if you can get the picture, I've got a bottle of Wesson oil here, and it's full. And now I'm going to pour it. I'm going to try to grab the oil. If you can lasso a contentious woman, you've been able to grasp the wind and capture the oil that you're pouring out of your Wesson bottle. Yeah, only God can change them. Whoever keeps the fig tree will eat its fruit, and so he who waits on his master will be honored. Now, this 18th verse ties quite nicely together with the closing verses of verse 23 through 27. And I know on the internet right now, on the radio, there are many ministers and other churches that join in with us tonight. And I'd like to say this to the young pastors as I teach the pastoral epistles, that your support, Paul chose to work and to minister. He was itinerant. Timothy ministered in the fig tree, that if you were the planter, you should eat of that fig tree. You should be taken care of by the fig tree. The servant attitude in our work brings the reward of the master, he says. So if you keep the fig tree, you're realizing you're a servant. It's not your tree. There's a master. The master will honor you. So if you're employed and you work for a supervisor, superintendent, if you're in law enforcement, you know, it just starts out with your squad, and then you got a sergeant, and then you got a duty lieutenant, and then you've got your captain of the substation, and then you've got your assistant chiefs, and you got your chief. And there's this pecking order. And for the Christian man or woman, no matter where you work, if it's in the Navy or the military, the government, or you're working at Walmart, or you're working for a computer corporation, you are a servant. Yes, you can make as much money as you want and go through life and be successful, but always have that attitude that I'm representing the King. I'm number one His servant, so whatever I do, as the Bible says, I'll do heartily as unto the Lord. So if you're a babysitter, you take care of these kids and you protect these kids. You haven't bathed and cleaned up in the house, straightened before the people get home. And if they don't tip you, or they don't pay you enough, or your daughter enough, you don't get upset, babysitting unto the Lord. If you have a paper route in the morning, I remember Jonathan, who led worship, wanted a dog. So I said, work for the dog. And he got a paper route early in the morning. And he didn't drive. So who drove him to the paper route? And then, who do you think it was when Jonathan, you know, surfed too late the day before and was too tired, that went and did the full paper route? And who do you think it was on Sunday morning that went up and down the stairs of the apartment buildings delivering those papers and going back and getting them and then coming and preaching three times? It wasn't Jonathan. But he did get in there and he did that paper route a little bit. We had a lot of fun on that paper route. And I remember one night we were collecting, and he knocked on the door of this one apartment in this very large 300 or 400 unit place that we delivered to. And the guy, you know, everybody gives a paper boy a tip, a buck, $2, $10, $20, something at Christmas. I do it with our garbage collectors. You know, you just care for him, say, here, I'd like to tip you. And this one guy, here he is, 9 years old, 10 years old, and this one guy says, you're not getting a tip. And I'm standing off to the side, and he was littler than me, and I wanted to step right up in his face and say, the Lord bless you, the Lord keep you, but I didn't. And he said, you had, I think the paper wasn't right in front. It was leaning off to the side of the door. It was some stupid thing. Oh, I wanted to punch that guy. I really did. I said, why would you crush this little guy's spirit? And you don't want to be like that at all. Sorry, you just don't want to be like that. So when you foresee evil, hide from it. Don't get up too early in the morning and yell at people. Watch out for the woman that's dripping oil all over you and blowing wind on you. And friction comes along. Now you deserve the right to get a paycheck for the word if it's a paper route or you're the CEO. It should be what you're doing should be supporting you, is the thought he gets across. And then in verse 23, when you tie it together, he says, be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. Someone once told me that the crops don't grow where the farmer's shadow is not seen. And I have a friend that's extremely wealthy that owns a huge business in Orange County and two or three square city blocks of buildings and factory stuff. And I just asked him once, I said, how often do you go in? He said, I walk through every building every day. I look at all the workers. I see what they're doing. And this is what Solomon's saying. Be diligent to know. I always like to know, what's the theme in counseling? Oh, there's a lot of guys and girls sleeping together, living together, and they're Christians. Okay. Then there's a wave of a lot of people getting divorced. Oh, really? Okay. And I like to know what's going on, because then the Lord, through the Word, can help. Now, there's a lot of Christians in San Diego County experimenting with homosexuality and lesbianism. It's just a heartbreak. But if you don't know where the people are that work for you or in the same command that you're in, you can't do well. So the word I think you underline there is the word diligence. Be diligent to understand what it is you're managing it. And then the reason he gives you is because riches are not forever. The richest man in the world could have just kicked the bucket and jumped off of a ledge because the banks went poor, right? So, as it says in 1 Timothy 5:17, pastors who do their work well should be paid well and should be highly appreciated, especially those who work hard at both preaching and teaching. But the scriptures say, never tie up the mouth of an ox when it is treading out his grain. Let him eat as he goes along. In another place, those who work deserve their pay. And this is all that Solomon's bringing across. You can figure that out in your own work ethic. When the hay is removed and the tender grass shows itself, then the herbs of the mountains are gathered in. The lambs will be the provision for your clothing.
As Mike has shown us in today's lesson, it's important for us to spend time in fellowship with other believers, and by doing so, we can be influenced by those who are stronger in their faith, and we can be an encouragement to those who may be weaker. Tomorrow we'll conclude our study with part 3 of the message, Iron Sharpens Iron. Please plan to join us then. As we close our broadcast for today, I would like to take a moment to remind you that Chapter and Verse only continues to be heard daily on this station due to the support of our listeners. So we do appreciate you praying for this ministry. Then if you'd like to be a part of keeping this radio outreach on the air, write to us at Chapter and Verse, P.O. Box 231150, San Diego, California 92193. Again, it's Chapter and Verse, Box 231150, San Diego, California 92193. You can also give online securely at mikemcintosh.com. If you're interested in additional spiritual resources, they're available at your fingertips 24 hours a day on our website. Whatever your current area of Bible study, you can listen to a corresponding teaching by Mike in the sermon section under the teaching link. Again, log in at mikemcintosh.com. Join Mike next time as he continues his survey of the book of Proverbs. Chapter and Verse is presented by Horizon International Ministries.
And I'll stand up and shout.